This is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. You can watch this show on Free Speech TV nationwide and listen to it on Pacifica radio stations and affiliates. The most populous state in the nation just got one step closer to socialized health care. On Thursday, the California Senate voted 23-14 to pass SB 562, a bill that would pave the way for a so-called single-payer healthcare plan for the state. Under such a plan, all Californians would pay into healthcare costs and benefit from them without the insurance middleman. The bill now heads to the Assembly for a vote. It's not clear if Democratic Governor Jerry Brown will sign it into law if passed. The Senate Appropriations Committee estimated that the plan would cost the state $400 billion to implement, but that analysis has come under criticism for failing to include current healthcare expenses, savings from smaller administrative overhead, and the state's bargaining power to purchase prescription drugs. A new poll has found a whopping 70% support among Californians for a single-payer healthcare system in the state. My guest is Michael Leidy. He is the Director of Public Policy at National Nurses United. Welcome to the program, Michael.
Thank you, Sonali. It's great to see you again.
Thank you so much for joining us. So your organization, NNU, has been one of the most important driving forces among in the grassroots pushing this bill and this kind of a plan with your allies in the California legislature. What does the Senate vote actually mean? It passed a committee and then now it's passed the Senate with a pretty big margin and it heads to the Assembly. Does this mean you're sort of legislatively speaking about halfway there?
Well, we're sort of halfway there. We didn't include a specific financing plan in the bill itself in the Senate, so we got a little bit more work to do there. But it is out of the Senate. It's very significant because the Senate is the obviously the smaller deliberative body like other state senates. So it's very significant that a policy decision has been made by that body to support this Medicare for All type system. So it's a very good sign.
So in its passage, does the California Senate essentially say, we support this, assuming there will be a financing plan that will work? So it's sort of a symbolic, yes, let's get started to actually put the details into place?
Yes, it is. It's a support for the policy. It's a support for the approach. And it says, yeah, we need to do some more work, get the financing in place as we're over at the Assembly. It'll go back to the Senate for final approval. But exactly right, Sonali, as you say, this is a step to say to Californians, we're going to respond to what's going on in Washington. We're not going to sit back and let the Trump administration and the GOP decide what California gets as health care. We're not going to let them take it away from folks who have earned it and gotten it under the Affordable Care Act. We're going to improve it. We're going to guarantee it for everybody. And that's the significance of the state Senate vote.
So what sort of work did Senators Ricardo Lara and Tony Atkins, the sponsors of the bill, have to do to get their colleagues to pass it? I mean, did they have to convince a lot of the state senators? Did the recent poll showing 70% support that NNU conducted, did that help make their case?
It did help make their case. And yes, they had a lot of persuasion to do with their colleagues because this is a big deal. And the Senate takes its role very seriously. And you have Ricardo Lara, a senator who is the chair of the Appropriations Committee. You've got Senator Tony Atkins, who is a former speaker of the Assembly. So these are heavyweights in Sacramento in terms of policy and reputation. And so they really did put themselves out to get that vote, to convince their colleagues that it's better to move this along, to show progress, than to necessarily have every T crossed. In fact, though, they were able to convince their colleagues that this is a sound policy approach in general and that the specifics will only improve it. And I think their persuasiveness, but really the active grassroots organizing, we were in every district practically doing town halls, canvas, phone calls. And I think all of that, I think it was the, we like to say, the inside-outside approach that really worked here.
Right. And nurses leading this charge is, of course, so significant because nurses know better than most of us what our current healthcare system costs in dollar amounts, but also costs just in sort of, the personal toll that it takes on individuals within this system. What is the next step, legislatively speaking? When does the Assembly vote get held? And do you have a sense that there is enough support in the Assembly to pass this?
Well, there are a number of Assembly members who approached us this winter saying they want to carry the bill. They want to really lead the effort. So we have a great deal of support in the assembly. The way it works is it goes to the Rules Committee first, and it's referred, as it's called, to Policy Committee. We expect that to be the Health Committee, and it needs to pass out of there by July 14th. So that's what we're working on, is to really make sure we get whatever changes we need in the bill, get the financing in, and also go to the Health Committee. So that's our current program.
So the version that the Assembly will vote on will need to have a financing plan.
Yes, in order for it to be a fully realized program, we do need to put the financing in. And that's the expectation that the Senate has, that they will get the bill back with financing in it. So that's what we're working on now. And once we do that, it will take 54 votes from the Assembly. But the groundswell here, Sonali, in California, as you know, is pretty strong. And what we've shown through the study is it saves businesses quite a bit of money. It saves individuals, both working class and middle income individuals, quite a bit of money from what they're paying now to private insurance. So we have a very strong case, and we think that's resonating with the constituents of these assembly members.
So assuming the bill passes all of these political hurdles, in the end, it arrives at the doorstep of one single individual who has the power to undo all the work that thousands, hundreds of thousands of people have put into making this a reality, and that's California Governor Jerry Brown. He has put a lot of his own sort of personal weight behind the Affordable Care Act and defending Obamacare at the federal level and its implementation in California. It's not clear that he is a proponent of single-payer healthcare. What can you tell us about where Brown stands on this?
He is a proponent of Medicare for All at the federal level. And what we need to do is convince him that, just as he says about climate and other issues, California has the resources of a nation and therefore should do guaranteed health care for all. We're taking on these other big issues. We can take on this one. And so what we need to do with Governor Brown is convince him the numbers add up. We have a strong study that shows the numbers add up. It provides a revenue proposal very consistent with the kind of revenue he supports. We know it has savings for business, which is important to him. We know it's a solid, dedicated, transparent, accountable funding mechanism that is also important to him, that's sustainable. So we really think on the merits, it's a very strong argument. The politics are in our favor as well. And we know that the researcher who did our study has the respect of the governor. He's worked with the governor before. And so we expect that to be a very rigorous examination, but one that at the end of the day, we expect to prevail. And we have been working with the Brown administration as they've implemented the Affordable Care Act. They know as much as anyone that the threats that the GOP are making towards spending on healthcare in California requires a response in California to protect what we have and to improve it. And so we think we have the best case politically and in terms of policy. And he's ultimately, he's a smart guy. And so we think we'll be able to make that case successfully.
Let's talk about the financing, because that is going to be the biggest sticking point. Republicans and other opponents of this bill are going to use the issue of the cost of this bill to oppose it. And of course, we know right now the costs of healthcare are out of control. It's a matter of who's paying for them. It's a matter of making healthcare a priority and simply saying it, you know, we should have it regardless of cost. But of course, cost is what will be used as a tool. And there is a lot of misinformation out there. Even the Senate Appropriations Committee's estimate of $400 billion is being really questioned. $400 billion is a huge amount. And some have said, well, that basically means a 15% income tax increase on ordinary Californians. The LA Times had an article whose headline, I think, was a little irresponsible, saying single-payer healthcare plan advances in California Senate without a way to pay its $400 billion tab. This sounds pretty misleading, and like this writer has made their mind up already. So how do you explain the $400 billion price tag?
Well, number one, it's not zero to $400 billion. We're currently spending nearly $370 billion on healthcare in California.
And when you say we are spending, what does that mean exactly?
That means that right now in the state of California, $370 billion nearly is the amount of money that taxpayers and individuals and businesses are paying for personal health care expenses in California. 70% of that is public financing, Sonali. So that means that taxpayers are footing most of the bill, but we're not getting our money's worth. And that's really the problem. If we don't do a single payer type system, the estimate is that it won't cost $400 billion, but in 10 years, it'll cost $578 billion. And that is the problem. The problem is not how much are we spending on healthcare now. It's too much. The question is, how do we control costs going forward? And as a moral imperative, guarantee healthcare to all. So our estimate is, in fact, we can save 18% from that $400 billion number, creating a system that costs about $330 billion and save businesses who are providing healthcare now many percentages on payroll, 2.5% for some businesses, 22% for small businesses who are currently providing healthcare. Middle-class families who have to buy their own insurance, they'll get a 9% raise. We were able to do this because you can wring administrative savings, you can contain prices for services, and you can lower drug prices. So these are mechanisms that are not available under the present system that are under our single payer approach, plus a broad-based public financing that is much more efficient than this kind of private-based tax subsidized system we have now. It's grossly inefficient. It's subsidizing the private insurers to no great effect because they add no value. They take 20 cents off the top and just for their profits and marketing and administrative waste. So we're able to end the insurance company bureaucracies that are denying us care, save money, contain prices, and cover everybody. That is the formula that works.
Let's talk about how individuals would be impacted, because I think when we hear these numbers, it still sounds abstract. And I'd like to just go through a few cases. So say, for example, employees of KPFK and KPFA Pacifica Radio. Currently, our employer pays our healthcare premiums. They cover all costs, which is very generous and kind of rare, but some employers do that. They will cover the costs of healthcare, so even premiums are $0, and copays are very modest for all of their employees and even their employees' families. If single payer were to pass, Pacifica would suddenly not have to pay its employees because the state would pick that up. But our taxes would naturally rise a little bit to pay for that. Wouldn't people like us, people who do have employer-based healthcare right now, actually end up paying a little bit more unless the employer passed those savings to us in the form of raises?
Well, probably not. I mean, our study, we financed this through what's called a gross receipts tax that exempts the first $2 million of revenue. And we also fund it through a very small sales tax of 2.3% that exempts food at home, any home mortgage or rent, and also utilities. And also provides a tax rebate for those currently at, I think it's 138% of federal poverty. So low-income folks would get a rebate to cover what sales tax they pay. But in the case of Pacifica, it doesn't seem to me that they would be subject to this gross receipts tax. That would relieve them of the employer contribution because they're no longer paying to insurance companies, as you say. And then those individuals who are paying the 2.3% sales tax, that's relatively modest. And if you have, we found that 36% of Californians have high deductibles, like $2,000 deductible or higher. So for most people, it would be less than the deductible.
Right. And that's really important to emphasize. There's only a few people, a small percentage that actually fall into a category right now that are relatively taken care of in the current system, right? So the majority would benefit, which of course, if one has a consciousness for a collective good and for paying into a collective good, this is a win-win type bill because we still have 3 million uninsured Californians and probably many, many more underinsured people or people who have, just as you said, huge deductibles or copays, and then people who are trying to run small businesses who would see some relief. What would happen to all of those people who currently work in insurance administration who would suddenly not be needed?
Exactly. And we're committed to protecting those workers, Sonali. I mean, we're not interested in anything that is so disadvantageous. We've got a just transition requirement in the bill. There's be funding for job training. There's also some tasks. We like to say that those administrative tasks that are devoted to denying care, denying claims, can now be used to pay claims. So we do think that there's a direct transference in some of the administrative work. There's also the question of retirements over time as we transition to the new system. So our economist that did the study is an expert in the transition between the fossil fuel economy and the green economy. So we're going to apply those same techniques and analyses to our transition that he's done in the energy sector. And we think we'll come up with a very good comprehensive plan.
So at this point, what are you, also let's talk about how this bill, if it were to pass, would play out in terms of the state's relationship to the federal government. Doesn't California, if everything goes smoothly and the way you would like to see it go, and we do have a single payer law in California, wouldn't California need the cooperation of the federal government to help reappropriate some funding in the right place? And under Trump, how could we possibly see that?
Well, that's a good question. But let's keep in mind, the Trump administration wants, say, to let Indiana do whatever it wants in waivers for under the Affordable Care Act or Medicaid. Right. And so there does have to be equal treatment. Then there's also the fact that the Affordable Care Act has a specific provision for waivers that we would meet the criteria for, because we'd either be budget neutral or save the federal government money in the long run, and it would expand coverage, include everybody. So given the statutory language and also the legislative intent, because remember, Senator Bernie Sanders helped shape that amendment to make sure that states like Vermont at the time could do single payer, we believe we have a very strong basis in statute that limits the Trump administration's ability to deny us this waiver. And in fact, we keep hearing about state innovation and the importance of trying things out in the state. Well, this is the perfect opportunity to do it.
So what needs to happen now? What are you recommending ordinary Californians do? And what about those living outside California watching this play out? How could it impact them?
Well, I think everybody around the country has a stake in the nurses winning this fight, because we can establish guaranteed health care as a moral imperative with a financing mechanism that saves workers and businesses money. And that model is something that I think every person in the U.S. should applaud and participate. We welcome their support. Go to healthyca.org to check out the campaign. For Californians, talk to your assembly member. Write a letter to your editor when you see these distortions in the media about this bill. In fact, this is a situation where popular organizing, people power can overcome the special interests, can overcome the deep pockets of the insurers and the pharmaceutical corporations. And so those are ultimately the folks that we got to overcome. And people power can do it. So call your assembly member, get engaged in the campaign, healthyca.org.
And Michael, what can you tell us about our allies on the other coast? New York is also considering a single payer system. I mean, yep. If California and New York, these two heavyweight states on opposite ends of the country, were to be able to successfully pull this off, this could really, of course, provide momentum for a nationwide effort. How far is New York?
Well, New York has passed through its first house, the Assembly in its case. The Senate in its case is the tougher house. In our case, it's the Assembly. So I think that's exactly right. I mean, all this attention between the New York and California and the other states on climate, well, there's also this popular upsurge in these states, and it's reflected at the state level, that we can also do guaranteed health care for all. And that is an incredible response to all the negative and defensive fights that we're in. Let's do something proactive. Let's actually create a better society with healthier people. And I think that opportunity is really exciting to some in this period of resistance. So we're very encouraged about New York. We're working closely. Our bill actually is in part based on the New York health plan. So we're working very closely with them and are really excited with our colleagues in New York at NYSNA, PNHP, Assemblymember Gottfried, is really we're just part of the same movement, and we're going to take it all over the country. And when you can do it in big states like New York and California, you know we can do it in the U.S.
Now, Michael, what do you make of some of the right-wing pushback? I've seen some people start to refer to California as Commifornia. One Republican senator in California, Tom Berryhill, said, "I absolutely don't trust the government to run our health system. What has the government ever done right?" In my introduction to this story, I said socialized healthcare, which a few years ago, 8 years ago or so, was considered a dirty term, but really that is what it is. We do have socialized healthcare for veterans. We have it for the elderly. And these days, that idea is not so much anathema, given how much people are suffering. And, you know, it feels like important to actually spell it out and take back these sorts of terms and ideas. So how do you respond to those who say socialized healthcare is communism?
Well, I think you got to tell Charlie Munger that, who's the co-chairman of Berkshire Hathaway, who's come out in favor of single payer. And I'm gonna venture a guess here that Charlie Munger wouldn't fit into that category. And this is the truth is, they want to paint this as some left-wing idea. And certainly it is a progressive idea to get rid of the insurance companies. But as you say, Sonali, when people ask me about socialized medicine, I always say, oh, you mean the Veterans Administration? Because and it's true. We've socialized this as a humane program to guarantee healthcare so that people live healthier, longer lives. And that's exactly the role of society. That's exactly what government should do. And so we are confronting that. We're confronting the anti-government bias. You've got this Nobel economist, Angus Deaton, who says that healthcare is the biggest driver of inequality because the rewards go to the top, and poor folks and working people have fewer resources to get the healthcare they need. Frankly, they don't have the resources. There's that study that says you got an expense for $400. Half the country nearly doesn't have the money to pay it. And what would an ER visit cost? Well, an ambulance ride costs $2,000. These are the realities of everyday life for ordinary people in this country. And so this talk, this rhetoric about communism or socialized medicine has nothing to do with what people's reality is. But this plan does. It actually provides something that we don't have now when it comes to healthcare. And that's peace of mind. And that peace of mind is profound. And it's what people desire. And they don't care about the labels. They want to know, how is it going to help me? And we can assure them these nurses wouldn't be doing this unless it's going to help their patients. And ultimately, I think that's where it's at. And if they want to call this a communist plot, again, I say take it up with the businesses who are going to save millions and in some cases tens of millions of dollars on healthcare. Take it up to the small business who has 9 workers now and can't provide healthcare. This plan will guarantee healthcare for all their workers. For the small business who is providing healthcare and now will no longer have to pay those premiums, it saves them 22%. of their payroll. So tell that this is communism to them who are basically making their businesses viable through this program.
And also, Michael, for those people who are currently spending a lot out of pocket for healthcare, they under this plan might have a little bit more income to spend on other things that make life worth living, which might in the end also stimulate the local and state economy. I mean, all around you cut out the profits to the health insurance industry and suddenly there's more money for the rest of us.
I think that's exactly right. I mean, these insurance companies, they're making $5 billion a year in net income in California. I think we can put that money to better use.
Michael, I want to thank you so much for joining us today. Give out that website one more time for the California bill.
Sure. HealthyCA.org. HealthyCA.org.
And the bill is SB 562. Michael, thanks so much and good luck to you.
Thank you, Sonali.
My guest is Michael Leidy, Director of Public Policy at National Nurses United. I'm Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com, where you can sign up for our daily newsletter. You can also find us on Facebook, Twitter, iTunes, and Vimeo.